Welcome to episode 65 of The Ball Run, the official podcast for snooker professional Stuart Bingham. This Cogito PR content is sponsored by renovation specialists R&J Carpentry and Construction, and it's a show in which I, sports journalist James Colasanti, ask the man nicknamed Ball Run about recent results, life on tour, and of course life in general. Good morning, mate. We've had a few technical gremlins this morning, but how are you today?
All good, thank you.
Good. Right, it's time. Now, you know, clearly after the dust has finally settled properly, this episode will be a proper debrief on another, what turned out to be another memorable year for you at the Crucible. I'm going to do this a little bit back to front and point out that you actually practiced with eventual champion Kyron Wilson on the eve of the World Championship. And we had a laugh about him running late. I remember the morning. Essentially, you're both kind of in the same snooker stable as part of Taylor Wilson's TW Sports Management Enterprise. So putting aside your disappointment in not going all the way yourself, how pleased were you to see Kyron join the pantheon of greats by becoming a world champion?
Yeah, it was good. Like I say, you obviously I had a practice with him before the qualifiers. So obviously massively helped me out. I had a couple of days with Kyron. I think he just got back off his little holiday that he went on, so he was a bit rusty. So I've hammered in the first two days.
So you're to blame. You sharpened him fully up, did you, for his crack at the Crucible?
Yeah, exactly,
he was match toughened, was he, by the time you sent him, didn't you?
Yeah. Time we obviously once I qualified, and then on the way back I was speaking to Taylor, and he was saying about possibly another game. And then obviously the draw come out, and I played on the might have been the Tuesday or the Monday, and I went up on Saturday to obviously play Kyron for a best of 19 and then travel up to Sheffield after. So I'll beat him again there. I've got to try and hold on to what I can at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're fancying it.
Was 10-9, it? Yeah, beating 10-9 in practice. So I shot him up.
Do you know, it's becoming even more heartbreaking as I hear all this, because I bet there was that inkling in the back of your mind thinking, you know, I've played him recently and all that, but hey ho, this is sport all over. Just in general, just lovely. He's a really nice guy, isn't he? And just it was great to see his name on the trophy, wasn't it?
Yeah, like I say, obviously his family, my family, all in the same hotel in Sheffield, so we were sort of edging each other on, and obviously he got the final, and obviously I didn't, but it was good to see him. He's sort of been knocking on the door for a while to get his hands on a Triple Crown event, and just obviously like could have happened to a nicer guy, really. He just, like say, the family background, his brother and everyone, his wife and kids, just obviously you see how much it meant to him, and fair play.
Yeah, one of snooker's good guys, absolutely. So I bring this back to you. I mean, your run to the semis featured five battling and memorable wins in different ways. You started by coming from, you were behind a couple of times, but eventually you came from 9-7 down to beat Stuart Carrington 10-9. And then you back that up by winning the last three frames to beat Lewis Heathcote 10-8. So first of all, on that, how good did it feel to secure your place back at the Crucible?
Oh yeah, every player wants to finish the season at the Crucible, so to get through them definitely put me in good stead for the actual tournament. But I could have easily been out in any of their matches, really. 7-3 down to Stuart Carrington, come back 7-0. Thought that was it, and then he's pulled away again to 9-7. And to be honest, I don't think he got a shot to win. I played like three great frames to win that match, and then same against Lewis Heathcote. He should have gone 9-7 up on me, Mr. Pink, and then obviously I potted the pink to go 8-8, and then the last two frames I think I made 170. So definitely put me in good stead for the tournament. Obviously exactly the same result than 3 years ago when I had to qualify and then end up getting to the semis. So I think, and I sort of I remember leaving the qualifiers and I thought, well, I reckon seven or eight qualifiers could win their first round match, and it turned out that way.
Yeah, the year of the qualifier. We'll come to that in a bit. But listen, I mean, you moved on. In the first round, you recovered from what I saw described as a little wobble to get past Gary Wilson. Just for context on that, you were 4-0 up and on the brink of a 7-2 lead before you missed a final black in a match, in which he got it back to 6-5 at one point. But you showed your experience, and it looked like you were warming into the tournament when you won 10-5. How were you feeling after that match?
Yeah, obviously, I was trying to secure my top 32 place at the time, so I had sort of my eye on that, and I think there was obviously myself, Jack Jones and Steve Maguire was all like together. So Steve Maguire was above me, so I needed to go one match above him to one match further than him to go above him. So even though obviously he got to the quarterfinals, I think he got the quarterfinals. So when I got to the quarterfinals, I knew that was me safe for the 32. And then obviously getting one more step, it obviously pushed me up even higher. But it's just obviously an unbelievable tournament for everyone, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we'll come to the main event in a minute, the one that grabbed all the headlines. But personally, I particularly enjoyed what was described as a pulsating encounter with Jack Lisowski in the next round, which of course you won 13-11. I guess what I liked about it most was probably your match play. It was the decisions, you know, the play and the percentages, knowing when to stick or twist with pots, safety, you know, clever positioning, ball development, that type of thing. For you, how good did that win against Jack feel?
Yeah, obviously Jack's a tough player. He's a top lad. Obviously, we had a little bit of laugh in the seat and things like that. It always breaks the ice. But like I say, obviously rate him highly. He's obviously the best player not to win a tournament at the moment. So I think he beat me in the first round or second round, obviously a few years before that, and he just put in everything, and he sort of didn't miss much early on, and then he started missing a few near the end, but just obviously somehow kept my nerve and got over the line in the end.
With Jackie's got a touch of that sort of Jimmy Wykes about, he's just mercurial, isn't he? Very, very sort of talented, and he's just waiting with him to kind of convert, I suppose, isn't it?
That's it. Yeah, like I say, obviously there's no easy games on the tour, and obviously he's been to so many finals, but he's obviously just coming up against people that are just playing better, or he, like I say, he's maybe probably feeling it at the last hurdle, and he's just obviously just got to get over that, and when he does, he'll maybe probably win a few more.
Obviously, you moved on to what would prove your season's high point, I would say. It's a fully deserved 13-10 quarterfinal win over, as you rightly called him, the best player to ever pick up a cue, Ronnie O'Sullivan. I read that you said something clicked out there when, I think it was when you were 8-6 down, and that's really how it looked for us watching at home. You know, everybody knows he was going for the historic 8th world title, and that you beat him on the way to your Crucible win in 2015. But what was the key to that win, and how good did it feel when your head finally hit the pillow that night?
I was obviously the only player to beat him in the Triple Crown event sort of this season or last season, so obviously winning the UK and the Masters, obviously he was going for the Triple Eight record, and it's sort of, I've always sort of said you've got to try and stay with him. He's going to have his little spurts where he don't miss for a few frames, but I always think if you can hold on to his pig, like his towels sort of thing, then sort of at the end of the match, obviously it's time for you to shine, sort of thing. But when he went 8-6, I think I missed the black to go up for the yellow off its spot. I needed the black, but I don't like just try and roll in blacks in, because if when they only need one snooker, I feel like they've got a chance.
Right.
So I always try and play the right shot, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's maybe the difference of some players out on tour, that You've got to play the right shot at the end of the day.
It's
don't
match
care.
Play. It's what it is, the nature of match play, isn't it? And it's a particular strong suit for you as well, isn't it? Yeah, like you say,
you look at the greats over the years. It's obviously like I practice with Ronnie loads, and what you see is like you see him playing the right shots. And don't care if you're sort of 60 behind or 60 in front, you've still got to play the right shot. And that's why they're winners at the end of the day. That's why he's the best player ever. But it's obviously massive last two frames of the session to come out 8-all. I think I made 190 something like that. And then I knew I was in the match, and even though I went 9-8 behind, I was thinking that could happen in 2015. So I'm like, don't panic, just sort of wait. And then I played, before I knew it, I was 10-9 up. And even had a chance to draw the frame at 10-9. He missed the yellow. Just sort of took his concentration. I think he thought he won the frame already.
Yeah.
And I could draw. I end up missing a brown to get on the blue. But it's sort of like, obviously 10-all at the break. I was like weighing a match, and then just a couple of mistakes here and there, and I've walked out, held my nerves somehow, and like I say, 113-10, and yeah, obviously the best, maybe probably the best match. I'd say best match. I may probably, it was more or less all the way through that tournament, even like first qualifying match against Stuart Carrington.
Yeah, they were all good. That's what I opened the shop by saying. Exactly. All five of those wins, they were just in their own way. They were all really good for you, weren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Ronnie was very magnanimous afterwards, and paid credit to you, sort of thing. And, he is what he is. He's, you know, he is that player. But, you know, it's good when you play him. You're one of those guys who doesn't get overawed. You don't let the occasion and the Ronnie thing sort of beat you before you break off, do you?
I'd love to say yes, but
yeah.
No, like I say, I've been, when sort of I played him or practiced him for a while, it does sort of get you a bit on edge when you see him play him in tournaments, especially like you say, when he's already got 95% of the crowd. And obviously, if he's on it, then he can steamroll you.
Yeah.
So even in 2015, I think one or two tournaments before that, he played me and he beat me like 9-2 or 6-0 or something like that.
Yeah.
But then obviously the next time I played him, I was sort of ready for it, so it helped me. But obviously I ain't played him for a while, so I was a bit sort of nervous of playing him. But obviously once I got involved in the match, I felt comfortable, and as the match went on, the confident I felt, and sort of like I was going for my shots. I didn't care if I missed. I missed obviously a couple like tough ones, but I was still going for them. And sometimes that can send out a message to your opponent that you're like, well, I'm going to go for my shots. Don't care who you are. I'm going to go. You sort of got to take your chance, because when I get mine, I'm going for it. And say that message is quite powerful when you play like the right people. Understand what you're trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, it all set it up in as what I saw dubbed the year of the qualifier. It was all set up for a last four meeting with Jack Jones. You've played him twice now. He's won twice. But when you went 9-8 up, I mean, I personally felt you had his number there. I watched the interview afterwards. You hammered yourself. You admitted you gifted him 7 or 8 frames. So I just wondered, have you now, you know, you've had a bit of time to reflect, have you put your finger on what or where it went wrong since, and how you can use that experience as a positive learning experience going forward?
Yeah, like I say, it's looking maybe back. Obviously, when I beat Ronnie, obviously you look at the draw, and it was similar sort of when I won in 15. I sort of looked at the draw, looked who was left in it, and like, well, I've got a chance here.
Yeah.
Obviously, the only player to have got my hands on that trophy. It was like, well, what a chance to get my hands on it again. This is like massive. What a chance. And maybe probably a little bit of that, sort of looking a bit too far ahead. Just maybe probably the added pressure of it all.
Yeah.
Instead of just, if I'd have played Judd, obviously Jack beat Judd before, the round before. If I'd have played Judd, I'd have maybe probably just as I did against Ronnie, sort of thing.
Yeah.
When the pressure's on and sort of started making a few mistakes, and it didn't feel like it was a great match, sort of like all guns blazing. It was it was a bit sort of drawn out. And
he dragged you into the trenches a bit, didn't he? He's, you know, he's,
no, just, yeah. I don't think he dragged me. I think just the way the match went.
I wasn't being derogatory towards. I just mean, you know, just the way it went. It wasn't necessarily set up for, you know, what you are, the big break builder and all that kind of stuff, sort of thing. You know what I mean? It's
weren't an open game. We just feel like playing. Bit of a boxing match, right? I'll punch you, you can punch me, and we'll just slug it out, sort of thing. But his safety was really good. And then when he did get the chance off of my mistake, he punished me severely, sort of thing. So it was just a tough game to be involved in. And then obviously you sort of missed a couple of blacks off the spot. You're sitting in your chair, he's clearing up, and they're probably the biggest sort of swing of momentums that can happen. And it just obviously it weren't meant to be, and obviously, like I say, fair play to Jack. He played well, he took his chances, and he just looked like, obviously, the bad start in the final. I see it was 7-0, and obviously he done well to sort of get back in the match, but it's obviously uphill struggle from 7-0 down.
Despite the sad end, you know, you still gave us all some brilliant nights watching along at home on the telly. You know, I know my lot, including the cats, were glued to the action cheering you on. So, obviously, thank you for that. And, you know, I checked you back up to, obviously, it's world number 25 in the rankings. You're 17th on the one-year list. So I just wondered, have you made your peace with how it all played out this year, and what sort of impact do you think it might have on next season for you?
Yeah, like I say, obviously, a couple of years ago, I got to the semis, and it's may probably sort of helped me out for a couple of years. Obviously, that time it got me back in the 16, but with obviously another few poor seasons that obviously I've dropped. But obviously the tour looks busy. Obviously, loads of tournaments on. Obviously, got I'm planning, like I say, playing a bit of nine ball, playing a bit of Chinese eight ball.
Yep.
I'm just trying to keep myself busy and play as much as I can. So hopefully, I can get my teeth into a few tournaments early on in the season and push myself up to the top 16 and try and get in the Masters again.
Yeah, we'll come on to the pool next. I mean, I'm interested to know how you feel, because I know you, obviously, I keep a close eye on you. I know you played a bit of pool in the run-up, well, throughout the season, but certainly in the run-up to the Crucible. Do you think it helps, in a way? A bit of a distraction, a bit of a, I don't know, maybe summoning the queue. I just don't know. I'm just interested in the crossover between the two things. Do you think they're just very separate beasts, or do you think in some ways they do help each other?
Yeah, I think it can only help, I'd say. Obviously, I played the eight ball, the Chinese eight ball. Obviously, I think I had 10, 12 days before the qualifiers. It did take me 2 or 3 days to get used to the size of the balls again.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the Chinese eight ball, they use the like American nine ball size balls, so they're a bit bigger.
Yeah.
So when obviously I got back, the Zoom balls looked like pool balls, sort of thing, really small, and obviously the tables look massive.
Yeah.
But yeah,
chucking those stingy pockets at the Crucible this year, and it was it was all a bit tricky, right? They were tight, exactly. Weren't they? The tables and the pockets of the Crucible. Any complaints there, or just fine?
No, I remember we played, I think it was like the British Open in Cheltenham. I don't know if it was last year or the year before. They were really nippy. I've spoke to a few people. Obviously, the way it works out at the World Championships, table one, which is like at the top half of the draw, and table two is the bottom half of the draw.
Right.
And obviously, we was on table two, and I felt it was a lot tighter than table one. Because they use the semi-final table, is normally table one.
Right.
And I found the pockets a little bit more generous.
Right, okay.
There was a couple of sort of shots at like the first sort of 2 or 3 frames I played that went in. It wouldn't have gone in on the other table. So, just obviously the way it works out. I've heard there's like 50 tables on tour, and obviously you're going to get a few different here and there. But, the table two... the ones I missed, the blacks off the spot, they'd drop in, but they weren't having none of it this year.
No, they weren't. No, and some mean middle pockets as well, but hey-ho. Moving on to pool, you know, before we sign off, we must mention your participation in the UK Open Pool Championship. It came almost immediately after the action at the Crucible ended. A brief appraisal of your crack at it from the organisers' website. It said World Snooker Tour star Stuart Bingham faced a tough opening round against snooker ace Fraser Patrick, who capitalised on Bingham's errors, controlling the table to secure a comfortable 9-0 victory. Although Bingham redeemed himself in his second match, he faced disappointment in his third and final match, narrowly losing 7-8 and being knocked out of the tournament. Pool is fast becoming a little bit more than a guilty pleasure for you. So did you enjoy taking part in that event in Telford?
Yeah, like I say, at the moment it's a bit of a learning curve. Obviously, I got certain new pool cues off of sort of my sponsor McDermott Cues in America, and I just couldn't sort of get on. I was meant to, obviously, I spoke to my friend who's got a pool table set up in his house near Southwood and Ferries. Mm. I was there actually last night having a little practice with him.
Yeah.
I was meant to, obviously, didn't know how far I'd go in the Worlds, but I was meant to have a practice beforehand, and because I got to the semis, obviously I didn't have no time to practice.
Right, yeah.
So, I went in there pretty cold, obviously. Like I say, new cues I had, I just couldn't get the hang of the way to cue through. Sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it was...
Moving between the two, you're a bit, I think in rugby parlance, we call it dual code, don't we? You know, you kind of have to convert between the two. And I take it there needs some sort of calibration. You know, you need to sort of get ready for pool, don't you? You can't just put down the snooker cue and pick up the pool cue sort of thing, yeah?
Yeah, like, that obviously it helps when you sort of know what equipment you've got and how it reacts and things like that.
Yeah.
So obviously I went in there thinking, obviously, all good, and I just couldn't get the hang of the cues. Obviously, spoke to McDermott since. They're sending me over some new equipment to sort of get hold of, and obviously I've practiced a bit more with. It was like a bit disappointed. I sort of, after my first time in Germany last year, I sort of thought like, yeah, I could do some damage, and obviously first match 9-0, it was like quite embarrassing. But
right, sure.
But it's just like, it's all a learning curve. Mm. I end up getting beat by John Morrow, a guy from Canada that. Obviously, I exchange phone numbers and things like that. I was talking to him the other day. He was in Canada having some, what was it, some steaks on the barbecue.
Oh, lovely. Half his life.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's good to sort of be around some of the pool players. They're all good. And, I've entered a couple more, one in Helsinki, beginning of August, and then from there I go straight on to Germany for the European again. So, obviously there's dates in the calendar where I can try and squeeze in a few more tournaments here and there.
Yeah.
And just say as play as much as I can. Obviously, I'm going to the Chinese 8-ball again in a couple of weeks in China. So, then I obviously get back from there, and then the season more or less kicks off. So, busy times all over.
Finally, I cannot let you go without, of course, wishing you a belated happy birthday for yesterday. You were 30-18, as they say in the trade, right? In terms of your age. Did you have a nice day with the family, and did they spoil you?
Michelle took me to Lakeside, but she seemed to spend more money on her than me.
It's more of an outing for her, was it? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So it was nice. Obviously, the night before we were at a Miller and Carter to obviously celebrate my mum and dad's 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
So
Maureen and Eddie, of course. Your biggest fans, as we always say.
That's it.
50 years! Congratulations, guys. That's a great knock. Yeah.
So it's just been a nice little couple of days, like I say, I end up going around my mate's house, take a bit of pool, took some money off him on the pool table.
Good.
And
that's how birthdays should be. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Did he let you win? Was it? It wasn't one of them, was it? He didn't want to spoil.
No. Yeah.
He's not like that. Nobody's like that. Let's face it. No. He wanted to hammer you, didn't he?
But yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Just finally, we had a quick chat before we started. You're in the Helsinki Open on the weekend, an invitational. Kyron's there actually. We said that there's a chance. We don't know what the snooker gods are up to, but there's a chance you may be playing Jack Jones. Again, don't, please, none of our listeners take this as gospel. Check your schedules and stuff. But just in terms of the event itself, are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, flying over tomorrow morning, afternoon. Mm. I think I might have an exhibition with Judd on the Friday, but then the tournament starts on the Saturday, and yeah. I knew I was meant to play Jack Lazowski, but I did hear rumours that he might be pulling out.
Yeah.
So I think you know more than me about who I'm playing, but you said you've seen it somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'd be obviously good to try and get some revenge.
Yeah. You lot will have plenty of chat about it, if nothing else, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You spoke in the car and, you know, since the Crucible, how's it doing? Is it, you know, you having a laugh with him and stuff?
Yeah, obviously follow him on Instagram. He's been here, there and everywhere.
Yes. It reminds me of you when you won and he's doing the rounds and he was at Chelsea the other day. He's enjoying it, as he should. Yeah, he's taking that trophy.
Yeah, without a doubt. We've had a little bit of banter. He said, obviously, drinks on me. And I'm like, well, I'm sure your money's hit the bank too. So the weekend's on you, not a drink on me. The weekend's on him.
Definitely. No, lovely stuff. Well, listen, as always, it only remains for me to say thank you very much for your time today, Stuart. And, of course, to wish you the best of luck in Finland this weekend.
Love it. Thanks, James.